Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Almost 1 year into the conflict, no major Western leader has called for talks to bring peace to Ukraine and Europe. Instead, we're witnessing dangerous escalation. The great tank debate is settled. Will it be fighter jets next? Where does this end? Crosstalking escalation, I'm joined by my guest, Peter Kuznick in Washington. He's a professor of history and director of the Nuclear Studies Institute at American University, as well as co-author with Oliver Stone of The Untold History of the United States. In Bangkok, we have Brian Berletic. He is a geopolitical analyst and a former U.S. Marine. And in Toronto, we cross to Christopher Black. He is a member of the Canadian Peace Congress and an international criminal lawyer. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. I want to go to Peter first in Washington. I want to read a few headlines here that have come out in the last news cycle or so. Number one, NATO says alliance is ready for direct confrontation with Russia. Second point, Russia warns of a full-blown war. Again, Poland says it's ready to send F-16s to Ukraine in coordination with NATO. And a headline from the Wall Street Journal, some Western backers of Ukraine worry that time might not be on Ukraine's side. So, Peter, I mean, this seems to be full steam ahead with escalation here, but we have mixed messages from Western capitals, and then throw in what the Russians are reacting to. I mean, this is a collision course to where, Peter?
A collision course to insanity. I mean, we are, the situation gets more and more dire and desperate by the day. And, you know, where is it heading? There is no off-ramp. The Russian official I speak to want to win it on the battlefield. The Ukrainians expect to win it on the battlefield. NATO is supplying more and more arms. And there doesn't seem to be any inclination at all toward diplomacy, negotiations, settling this thing. We know, everybody knows that eventually is going to be resolved at the negotiating table. Biden says that, Milley sends that, the Russians know that too, but nobody seems to have any impetus to get there. So that makes the situation more and more desperate.
Well, Peter, you know well, because you've been on the program since then, that there is a starting point, and it was the December 17, 2021 diplomatic note to NATO and the United States. That's a starting point right there, and the West ignored it, okay? That's where the starting point is, but the West dismissed it. That's why this happened here. Let me go to Christopher in Toronto. You know, I'm not a professor of international relations or law, but it doesn't make any sense to me that escalation is a form of deterrence. It's just the reverse. Go ahead, Christopher in Toronto.
That's right. But the entire position of NATO since the at least and before the Maidan coup in 2014 is one of aggression against Russia, and that's what they've intended all along. So it doesn't make sense to any rational person, but it does to those people, the neocons in charge in Washington and London, who have ambitions to repeat what Hitler tried to do by conquering and destroying and taking apart Russia. And regional conflict in Ukraine is their armed fist against Russia, and that's what they're trying to do at the present time, but they're failing, and their sanctions have failed. It doesn't make any sense in rational terms. But you have to go back to what do they really want? What is their ultimate objective? Because as Clausewitz often said many times, that war is politics through other means. So they're trying to achieve something, but they risk destroying the world to try and achieve it, because they cannot achieve it without a major conflict which would lead to nuclear war.
Well, Christopher, if I go to Brian in Bangkok, I mean, we all know. I mean, they've told us over and over again, Joe Biden on a number of occasions, that Putin must go, essentially regime change. You can get the radicals in the Baltic states, in Poland, the dismemberment of Russia. This is what they want. Okay, well, obviously, Russia isn't going to agree to that. Okay, so and on top of it, you know, that that very sophisticated foreign minister in Germany says that Europe is at war with Russia. So, I mean, what are the Russians missing here? Brian.
Well, I think what Christopher just said, NATO's intention is to dismantle Russia. And this isn't something that started last year in February, or even all the way back in 2014. This is decades of preparation by the U.S. and NATO to encircle and contain Russia. And I believe the United States and their allies, they realized that the window of opportunity to achieve this, as well as encircling and containing China, the window of opportunity is closing. And so they're rushing to try to finish this before it closes all the way. And this dangerous desperation that both of your other guests have talked about, this is actually scary. And we're watching this, and we're watching Russia once again on the offensive, Ukraine losing ground. And unfortunately, the better Russia does on the battlefield, the more worried I become regarding what NATO will try to do out of desperation.
Peter, react to that, because Brian is really on to it here, because we all agree that it'll be settled on the battlefield. I can't see how Ukraine can possibly win without NATO intervening. And I don't even think NATO can succeed in Ukraine, even though they are there as a co-belligerent. Unofficial, of course. Okay. I mean, what has happened here is what's really terrifying for all of us is that the West has made this existential. For Russia, it is. It's to be or not to be. But it's not existential for the West, but they've made it into that. Peter.
Yes, that's why we think of this as a form of insanity. The dynamic is very, very depressing at this moment. Russia is making gains on the battlefield. The spring offensive looks like Russia will make more gains before those tanks get there. And even once those tanks get there, that will not be sufficient to stop the Russian offensive. So what does NATO do next? Now they're talking about F-16s. Now they're talking about ATACMS missiles. There's increasing escalation, but there is some pushback. We saw the comments by the president of Croatia. We've seen similar comments by the president of Bulgaria. We've seen Orban. And there is growing signs of disunity in NATO. This idea that pouring more fuel on the fire is a good idea by sending increasing weapon systems, heavier and heavier weapon systems. There's a lot of opposition to that right now. Does that mean that's going to succeed? We don't know. But there's also a couple other things. We have to remember that Biden came to office saying, number one, he's going to restore American primacy. But number two, he's going to go after China. And the recent report by the Rand Corporation about why a long war is not in America's interest is very important. It just came out. And we see these comments by General Minahan saying that within 2 years, the United States is going to be at war with China. And then you've got Mike McCaul, the head of the House Armed Services Committee or Foreign Affairs Committee, saying that he agrees with Minahan. So clearly their focus that they intended was not Russia. They thought they could hurt Russia by going after China. And that's the main priority. Biden has surrounded himself with 18 top advisors from the Committee for New American Security. These are all the China hawks. So they would like to figure out a way to finish this one off quickly so they could focus on their primary objective, which is really China. Taking down Russia is collateral, but they're happy to do that, of course. That's been an important part of American strategy for decades.
You know, Christopher, a lot has been made of this Rand report. You know, I'm sorry, but I just can't take it too seriously. It's not in America's interest. Well, certainly it's not. It's not in anyone's interest. But there are plenty of interests involved in this conflict in Ukraine. Okay, they don't care about American security. They care about profits. Okay, they want to make weapons. Right. They want to export. Okay, they want to control the European military market as well. It has nothing to do about virtue and interest here. It's about greed and a power play. Christopher in Toronto.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's been the way all the way since they attacked Yugoslavia, which was the first, in my view, the first phase of this war against Russia. That was to destroy Yugoslavia, which they almost failed at doing, but they finally did by threatening to bomb carpet bomb Belgrade. But that was the first phase, and that war, this development of this war has been going on since then, as Brian has said. And there is no morality. They don't obey any laws. They deny that they're actually taking part in this war as belligerents, but they are, as you say, co-belligerents quite clearly. They try and qualify that by saying they have limited neutrality because Russia is the aggressive state. They threaten to invoke Article 5 of the NATO treaty, although Russia can view it as already activated because all of NATO is fighting against Russia. But what would they do if they activated Article 5, since they're doing everything else already? It would seem to me a very steep escalation, because that would give them the direct take off the mask of pretense that they're not involved in this war, and provoke them or prompt them to raise the nuclear war threat. And we remember the Atlantic Council in November stated that the American government should ignore the Russian nuclear deterrent and should start quietly placing nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction in Eastern Europe to be used against Russia, and they should start doing it then. That was back in November. So I think that's what scares me, as it does Brian, that the more Russian forces are victorious on the battlefield and the more NATO is exposed, they will use some pretext or stage something to invoke Article 5. Well, I also agree with Peter that the whole threat is against China, but Russia has to be removed.
Yeah, but Christopher, we've already seen the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, it shows to what lengths they will do to ensure unity among European NATO allies. I mean, that absolutely shut the door on Germany being any kind of decision maker inside the alliance. And we saw with the great tank debate, which was a complete fraud, in my opinion. It was all about escalation. All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on escalation. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. Remind you, we're discussing escalation. Brian, in block A of the program here, Article 5 was mentioned, and that was one of the questions I sent out via my producer here. And it's something that I've thought a lot about, and even at the very beginning of this conflict, I thought there's a certain inevitability that it will be invoked here, because if more and more heavy weaponry, sophisticated weaponry, is sent to Ukraine, which seems to be the intent, that shows that the West is a co-belligerent in all of this. And Article 5 is nonsense because it's just a cover, okay? When if these Abram tanks, which I believe will never make it to Ukraine, but let's say they did, if they're being moved across the Polish border, it's fair game for Russia to destroy them. They're going in there to kill their soldiers. So it's really kind of turned into almost a joke, unfortunately, even though it could have catastrophic outcome here. So, I mean, this is something that, you know, NATO is going to have to reckon with here. NATO is not nearly as strong as it thinks it is. It has two major militaries, the United States and Turkey. The rest of it is basically negligible. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, this is something that we have to keep in mind as we see all of these weapons flood into Ukraine. The Russian military destroyed the military that Ukraine had at the beginning of the special military operation. Between that period of time and now, NATO had sent equipment from the Warsaw Pact, left over from the Cold War, to Ukraine. That was a lot of equipment. We're talking hundreds of tanks. Russia has destroyed that, which is what brings us to today, where they're talking about shipping Western main battle tanks to Ukraine. And these are weapon systems that a lot of people are unaware of, take months, if not years, to incorporate into an army that is not familiar with them. And then when you're talking about something like aircraft, it's even more complex and involved, and the time frame is even longer. So what are they actually really doing? Surely in Moscow, they know that these weapons are not going to be effective, at least not in the hands of Ukrainians. So what is NATO planning on doing? And this is the real big question. Are they going to have NATO operators operating this equipment. And I would argue that even then it would not matter unless they openly intervene and use everything they have in combined arms warfare will not make a difference. And are they going to escalate to that point? And between yourself and your two other guests, it seems to suggest that they are incrementally moving in that direction. This is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, Peter, I mean, I think it was Boris Johnson a few days ago, the disgraced Boris Johnson, I should say. I mean, he's basically touting this line coming out of the Atlantic Council. Well, the Russians haven't used tactical nuclear weapons to this point, so they probably won't. I mean, what kind of buffoon says something like that in a situation that we face right now? Peter.
The New York Times buffoons say that, too. I mean, that the January 18th article in the New York Times saying that U.S. leaders are increasingly open to a Ukrainian invasion of Crimea, and with the based on the assumption that if with all the red lines that NATO has crossed already of Russia's, and Russia has not responded significantly, then they're not going to respond to anything, and that the threats of use of nuclear weapons are simply a bluff. Well, that's very, very, very dangerous.
Does anyone on my panel and our viewers want to see that tested? I mean, this is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. Keep going, Peter.
It's absurd. But the whole strategy is really very, very dangerous. The idea of trying to defeat Russia, inflict this defeat on Russia. President Kennedy said in his American University commencement address in June of 63, said to put a nuclear armed power in a position of suffering a humiliating defeat or use of nuclear weapons is either a failure of policy or a collective death wish for the human race. And that's the position we're ultimately in if the West succeeds in what it's trying to do right now, which is why I'm looking for any off-ramp to get to the negotiating table as quickly as possible, rather than prolong this and let the
I'm sorry, Peter, but this tell the Zelensky regime to go and surrender. Then it's done.
I do.
That's what's going to happen eventually. Why don't we do it now, okay? And save hundreds of billions of dollars and save lives. Okay, this is absurd what the West is doing, propping up one of the most corrupt regimes in the world. Okay, and you want to keep giving them money and giving them hope? Okay, that's ridiculous here. Christopher, if I can go to you, so Boris Johnson, New York Times, you know, nuclear weapons haven't been used yet, but because Russia, you know, you can keep crossing their red lines. Let's go back to last year in February. Prior to that, Russia said, you know, we have our demands for pan-European security. We send them to you on December 17th, okay? And they said if you don't respond in the way that we want, or at least enter negotiations, there will be military technical reaction. There was the special military operation. So I can't understand where these people are coming from. Russians don't bluff. They act. Christopher.
That's right. And we may see a reaction in John Helmer's report of his analysis of the David Ignatius op-ed in the Washington Post a couple of days ago in an interview with Blinken, in which Blinken proposed some deal with Russia in that op-ed, in which he suggested Russia could retain the Donbass or the areas it seized, partition Ukraine, and then have a rump Ukraine. And it wouldn't be part of NATO, but that is seen, I think, by Russia as another attempt to buy time to rebuild the Ukrainian army and rebuild NATO.
Exactly.
And it may be that if Article 5 is invoked, it may not go to the nuclear weapon use immediately. It could be that they would then use Article 5 to mobilize the West. It's being suggested in European states to increase the draft, mobilize the population like they have in Ukraine. And they could try and mobilize NATO and spend a couple of years rebuilding the NATO forces while they're harassing NATO and Ukraine all this time.
But Christopher, let me go to Brian here. I mean, This is something I said from the very, very beginning. There has to be a resolution. Russia is part of the Eurasian land space. It must have its security guaranteed. And until that happens, they're not going to say, oh, well, let's take a ceasefire and let Ukraine rebuild and let you become absorbed into NATO. Russia will not allow it. It's not going to do this again. No way, no how. It will get the resolution it wants, and it will get it unilaterally if necessary. Brian.
Absolutely. As you pointed out, they tested Russia. Russia acted militarily in Ukraine. They have already tested the waters, attacking Crimea, hitting the bridge across the Kerch Strait. And how did Russia react? They began dismantling Ukraine's power grid. And there are many other options that Russia has available to it to escalate even further. So this is something that the West is aware of. They're aware that Russia is in a situation. This is existential for Moscow. They know this. They're pretending that, oh, Russia isn't going to react because they want to continue pushing as far as they can. We just look at other instances of the U.S. and NATO, whether it was officially under the banner of NATO or not, in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria. They eventually left Afghanistan after 20 years. This shows how stubborn they are and how much further past any point of reason or logic or rationality they're willing to go in pursuit of advancing their geopolitical objectives. And so we have to ask, how far are they going to push in Ukraine? Yeah. This seems to be the end point.
Yeah, I mean, when you have hegemony, you don't let it, you don't want it to go away, and you're going to really do everything in your power to grasp it, because American hegemony is weakening around the world, de-dollarization and all of these other things here. Peter, you know, they always talk about an off-ramp, you know, give the Russians an off-ramp here, but why the West, particularly the United States, never sees that it needs an off-ramp, does it?
No, but I'm not in full agreement with other guests who think
that's
that
why
NATO,
we have you on, Peter. We want to have
NATO
is a, we need different NATO opinions. We need different opinions. That's why you're here.
NATO
Thank you.
I'm saying I'm not in agreement that NATO is a paper tiger, and that this situation is so much in Russia's military advantage. Right now, Russia has some initiatives. The Russian military has not performed well. And I don't want to see NATO being tested. I don't want to see Article 5 being invoked. I don't want to see World War III, because the possibility of escalation to full-scale nuclear war is very, very palpable. And so I think we have to stop talking about this kind of bravado and look realistically at what we're facing now, which is a potential for real gridlock.
Where does the bravado come from? Where is it coming from? Who started all of this? I mean, who had forced regime change in Ukraine in 2014? Peter, I'm sorry, Peter, but who didn't enforce Minsk, okay? Who lied and was deceitful about that? Who militarized Ukraine? I mean, talk about bravado, really?
That's well true, and you and I have talked about that for a long time, and we agree on that. However, most of us did not think that Putin was going to invade.
I telegraphed the world for months that it's going to happen. They don't bluff, okay? Keep going, Peter, finish up. 30
I'm
seconds.
Saying that, I'm saying that the West has created a situation where NATO expanded to Russia's doorstep and certainly did not do anything to impose the Minsk II agreement, and then Putin responded. But that was still the wrong thing for Russia to do. The invasion was not in any way justifiable.
Well, that's where we disagree. We don't agree on that,
I have to disagree on that, too. I think, quite as an international lawyer, it was quite justified on Article 51. It was legal and justified.
All right, we're gonna go into another program that I don't have time for right now. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Bangkok, and in Toronto. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.